Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Wednesday, November 9th. Today, we're talking with Colorado Sun environmental reporter Michael Booth about local nonprofits and neighborhood groups getting big grants from the Environmental Protection Agency to pay for their own air pollution monitoring around oil and gas wells and other sites. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Xcel Energy. Colorado has some of the nation's best wind and solar resources, and Xcel Energy is putting them to work for you. Their nation-leading wind energy expansion is reducing our carbon footprint while producing some of the lowest-cost electricity on the Colorado grid. Learn more at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Amid the statues of American icons in the U.S. Capitol's National Statuary Hall collection resides a seated bronze figure of a humble, determined woman, Dr. Florence Sabin. Born in the mining town of Central City on this day in 1871, Sabin grew up there and in Denver. While visiting a school, her mother recoiled at the common use of a single cup for all students to drink water, a hygiene lesson Sabin recalled for the rest of her life. She attended several New England schools and taught in Denver before enrolling in Johns Hopkins Medical School in 1896. Sabin battled skepticism about women doctors through tenacious work, quietly demonstrating her skills rather than crusading. After graduation in 1900, Sabin focused on laboratory work as the first woman faculty member at her alma mater. There, she reinvented knowledge of the lymphatic system, blood flow, and tuberculosis, a disease she knew well from her Colorado childhood. Sabin earned such renown that she was selected to represent all women scientists in the United States at a ceremony honoring Marie Curie in 1921. 4 years later, she accepted a position as the first woman hired by the Rockefeller Institute in New York City, where she continued her studies until an age-mandated retirement in 1938. The 67-year-old returned to Denver to live with her sister, Mary. Sabin's retirement ended in 1944 when Governor John Vivian asked her to chair a state commission on health, part of a campaign to prepare Colorado for the post-World War II era. Studies demonstrated Colorado's shockingly high rates of disease, poor controls over milk production, and a lack of adequate sewage treatment. She authored legislation passed by the General Assembly in 1947 that rectified many of these problems. At her behest, lawmakers also established a medical training school. When Sabin died in 1953 at age 81, she left behind a healthier, grateful state. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to hear from working journalists who have been covering the 2022 election season. Hear about their perspectives, experiences, and more with political reporter Jesse Paul. Registration is free. The event will be held virtually on November 17th from 6 to 7 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. And I'm grateful to be visiting with the Colorado Sun's environmental reporter, Michael Booth, again. Welcome back, Mike.
Nice to be with you again, Carol.
Yeah, thanks. I was hoping that we could talk about today's temperature newsletter that you and our colleague John Ingold craft every Wednesday, and it goes to supporters at our $20 a month or more level. And you've got a couple interesting things that you're going to have in that today. Well, what do you want to talk about first? The local nonprofits and neighborhood groups getting grants?
Yeah, let's do that. To let people know about what the philosophy is of the temperature, John and I try to both preview stories that we're going to be going into more depth later in the week or early the next week. So readers of the newsletter get a preview on that. Sometimes we're doing standalone stories that you won't see on the website at all. So it makes it even more important for people to subscribe to the newsletter. We also do annotated charts that try to explain something big and visceral in just one big glance and one paragraph. And we also curate some good local and national news in both climate and health, and try to give people one-stop shop. What we're going to be talking about this week is air pollution again, but a different way of attacking it, I guess, is a way to look at it. There are some nonprofit groups, environmental groups, and also neighborhood groups who just don't believe that either the state of Colorado or the oil and gas industry or the Oil and Gas Commission are really doing a good enough job for their purposes, monitoring the air pollution that comes especially from oil and gas sites, from some major industrial polluters like Suncor. And they either don't feel that that monitoring is being done on enough substances in enough places, or that the reports that are put together are making connections between the different kinds of pollution that get tied together in the atmosphere in the Front Range. And so they want to do their own. And the EPA this year started offering money to do that, really bypassing the state government and bypassing any other obstacles that these local groups see, and saying, if you come up with a proposal that we feel is scientifically valuable, then we'll fund it. And there are quite a few Colorado groups that just in the last 2 weeks have been told that they've got this money from the EPA, and they're going to go ahead and do, in some cases, mobile air monitoring and be open with the public about what they find.
Well, that is very interesting. And so I'm curious, I live, you know, we've talked about this before, in Capitol Hill. I am a member of CHUN, the Capitol Hill United Neighborhoods. So is it neighborhood organizations like that that are able to apply for these grants?
Yes. The organizations that have won the grant so far are those that have been working specifically on environmental justice in particular, or climate justice and climate change. So for example, one of the first groups to get almost $500,000, just under $500,000, is 350 Colorado, which a lot of people who are familiar with environmental news have been following as someone very interested in controlling climate change and reversing it. And they feel that, in especially in Northern Colorado, they work with community groups up there where there have been a lot of oil and gas sites sited, in some cases very close to elementary schools, that have kind of gotten in the news for protesting what they feel are unfair and unhealthy emissions there, and the state and local governments not doing enough about it. So they are now going to be contracting with Boulder Air, which is a well-known and scientifically respected air monitoring group, to put mobile air monitoring equipment in those neighborhoods in Northern Colorado near oil and gas pads, and trying to monitor and then pass that information on to the state, making it publicly available. And they hope coming up with more information and better arguments for what they hope will eventually be more regulation.
Really interesting. And then I imagine that some of the neighborhoods around Suncor and other areas will be interested in this.
Yes, there's a group called Black Parents United Foundation that is specifically interested in protecting low-income communities in Aurora. And Aurora has just been in the news for approving a bunch of new oil and gas well pads and drilling areas in the northeastern fast-growing sections of Aurora. And so whether that gets targeted specifically those, or they target other industries that they are concerned about, that is another kind of neighborhood group that works on both climate change and air pollution, but also local environmental justice issues, where they feel that too much industry and too much pollution gets sited in lower income communities because they don't have the political power or the economic clout to oppose it. And this is one way to combat that, using federally available money to work on these environmental justice issues that are now written into both federal and state law.
No, that's great. I look forward to reading more about that today and going forward. And back to your earlier explanation of the temperature newsletter, this story is what I love about the temperature is how it's the intersection of climate and healthcare in Colorado, and how those two things impact each other, particularly in this time of climate change. So it's been more than a year now that you and John Ingold have been doing this newsletter, and I really enjoy it. Well, thanks, Mike, for dropping by again. We'll talk to you again next week or sometime soon. And thanks to everyone who helped produce today's podcast and to our production partners, Pirate Audio. If anybody has questions or thoughts about the Daily Sun Up podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And have a wonderful day out there. I hope you join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado voters said in a resounding way they want Governor Jared Polis to serve for another 4 years. The Democratic incumbent won in a landslide over Republican Heidi Ganahl in Tuesday's elections. U.S. Senator Michael Bennett also sailed to victory in his re-election bid, handily beating Republican challenger Joe O'Dea for his third term. On the state level, voters were evenly divided over whether wine can now be sold in grocery stores, in a result too close to call as of 9 p.m. Tuesday. For coverage of all the statewide ballot questions and races, go to coloradosun.com. Many people transitioning from jail or prison struggle to re-enter society because they don't have a roadmap and support. Mesa County is trying to change that. The Western Slope County, along with local support groups, learned from a tour of other communities and has started a program to help with housing, jobs, transportation, and mental health services. Their re-entry roadmap pays attention to those who struggle with substance abuse, mental illness, or both, and aims to direct them to the right groups on the outside. employees at the Fading West Modular Home Factory share a similar vision that is bigger than their particular job at the Buena Vista facility. It's a mission even bigger than delivering affordable, high-quality homes to families who struggle to find housing. Fading West is creating a process to efficiently and quickly prefabricate homes to communities across the West. In our Housing Lottery series, Sun reporter Jason Blevins is following the 24 homes Fading West is sending to Norwood near Telluride. There, a first-of-its-kind program brings together a nonprofit developer building on free land, philanthropic support, a unique mortgage lending program, and lucky locals who secured their affordable homes. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.